You're listening to Civic Media. You can tune into any of our live shows on any radio station across the state with the Civic Media app. Find us in your phone's app store and listen anytime, anywhere.
Good morning. Welcome to Matinair on Air. Jane Matinair, Greg Bach, and Calvin Butenoff coming to you live from our studio here at Radio Park in Racine. You can always join us. You can call or text. The number is the same, 855-752-4842. You can leave a comment as well on the live stream. If you're watching on Facebook, YouTube, and what used to be Twitter, coming up on the show, economics professor Rick Reed will be here after the 9:30 news. It's Econ 101 with Jane and Greg.
Get your pens and papers.
Get your pens and pencils. I just think it's important to talk to someone who can break down things that are very complicated. Mm-hmm. Because I never took econ in high school or college.
I definitely dropped econ once in college.
You dropped it once.
Yeah.
But I think it's important to have someone who can explain it in digestible ways.
Yeah.
And especially when we talk about the USA credit rating and some other things that have been going on. So if you have a question for Professor Reed, please text it in now.
Text it. Call us later. Send an email. Send a voice note.
Send a voice note.
But, just shoot those questions over to us, and we will, we want to get them to him. Make sure it's in context and more of a question than, like,
a statement.
Exactly.
Yes.
But, yeah, we're looking forward to having Professor Reed on the show today.
Absolutely. That is coming up after the 9:30 news. In hour number two, it's June 2nd.
What does that mean, Jane?
It's the first Monday of the month, which means we are going beyond the cheese.
I like the salute, beyond that cheese.
Dun, da, da, dun.
To space.
We're going beyond the cheese to highlight a business in Wisconsin outside of the dairy industry. Yeah. So we are going to be joined by John and Kate McLaughlin from the McLaughlin and Hayes Hat Company. They make hats.
What are they, Jane?
They are a haberdasher and a milliner.
There it is.
It's so cool. It really is so cool.
Make it absolutely perfect if they had their third partner was a cobbler. Oh.
Something to shoot for,
right?
I guess.
Yes.
But Steve Hayes also, I believe John and Kate and Steve are going to be joining us in studio.
Excellent.
After the 10 o'clock news. So I would love to see hats come back. I would. That's me personally. I think hats are great.
I used to work with a couple gentlemen and not in the early 19th century who would wear in winter, they would wear hats. They would wear their hats, and it was it wasn't a wool hat. It was like
a fedora.
Yeah, it wasn't a fedora, but it was brimmed.
Right.
And it was one you had to go to a hat store to buy.
Yep.
And I just always thought it looked really nice. And I feel like at a certain age, I'm going to do that. But can I just make a real quick confession, Jane?
Sure, sure.
I want to rock a cowboy hat. But I also feel like it's not going to work in the long run because
I just don't know that cowboy hats work in Wisconsin unless you're outstate.
Yeah, but that's the thing is I want it to work because I think I'd look good in one. And that's what bums me out.
We can do a road trip to McLaughlin and Hayes because they're on Kinnikinnick Avenue.
Oh, I know exactly where they are. Yeah,
yeah, in Bayview. And ladies, if you have a wedding coming up or something, they make fascinators. They make really elaborate hats for the Kentucky Derby and things like that. So please stick around for Beyond the Cheese with McLaughlin and Hayes after 10 o'clock. Also next hour, we will lighten it up from 10:30 to about 10:50 with the segment we call Audio Sorbet.
Mm-hmm. Ooh.
Try and lighten things up a little bit, little palate cleanser for your ears,
yeah.
Get away from the news, get away from politics. The question today is, what is the chore you've been putting off?
The project.
What is the project, the home project you have been putting off?
And you don't have to own a home to do this either. What is that project around the apartment, the house?
Every time you walk past it, you go, oh, I should do that. I should really do that.
Or like me, you say all the time, I'm going to do that. And you're like,
never
three
happens.
Years later.
Yeah. What is the project that you need to get done and it's just not happening? And then we'll wrap it up as we always do with This Shouldn't Be a Thing. Today it is the Buzz Off Edition. So stay tuned for that. with Beyond the Cheese. If you have a business or industry or something in your town that you think would be good for that, mm-hmm. something outside of the dairy industry, we would love to hear about it. So let us know at janesays@civicmedia.us. J-A-N-E-S-A-Y-S, Jane Says. @civicmedia.us. Right now, though, we did want to start off. We had Representative Mark Pocan was on the show with us on Friday, and he did say that he was going to be having another town hall over the weekend, which he did. And Derek Van Orden, who was invited, was not there.
What? Wait, whoa, whoa, whoa.
I know, what a shocker. Mark Pocan was in Eau Claire, the 3rd Congressional District, mm-hmm. represented by Derek Van Orden. On Saturday, this was a town hall organized by Opportunity Wisconsin. Van Orden, of course, was invited to attend, but declined. I will say this, and quite seriously, Derek Van Orden has said that he and his family have been the target of threats.
Okay.
Which is very serious.
Yeah.
For all of them. I mean, judges are getting threatened. We have numerous representatives who are getting threatened. Mark Pocan does say, you know, I've had threats too, but I'm here. I guess that's their own individual decisions, but it is a reality that this is happening and people are threatening our elected officials.
And that is terrible. And if that's the case for this, and I find I understand it, but that also does not explain why previous invites have been ignored as well. And this is something that's going on countrywide as far as political leaders, specifically the GOP, ditching out on town halls, public events where they can be questioned and asked about policies, especially when you claim that SNAP benefits will not be cut and then you vote for cuts to SNAP. So that being said, absolutely. Absolutely. You're right. Violence is not encouraged. Violence is not welcome. That is not the way
to do it. It's not acceptable.
And I hope that he and his family are absolutely safe.
Derek Van Orden has said he prefers telephone town halls where the meeting isn't dominated by people he calls left-wing critics.
Oh.
And again, he's also said his family has gotten death threats and is vulnerable in an in-person setting. We have talked about this a lot. A lot of these town halls where people have showed up and this claim that they're all being paid by George Soros. Everyone's being paid off. If that were the case, I feel fairly confident that someone would have a copy of the check signed by George Soros for their appearance at these town halls. Well,
how long have they been saying that these are paid actors from George Soros? It's not just recently. This is years now. So you think about every paid actor over a course of 10, 20 years, he'd be broke on top of the billions of dollars he's given to campaigns as well. And also, no one's ever produced a check. No undercover right-wing activist has signed up to be a George Soros crisis actor or whatever and then gotten their check and you're like, here it is.
Here's
we
the proof.
Did it.
Here's the proof. Yeah. But this would have been right up Project Veritas's alley when they still had some air of legitimacy. That seems to have been gone. But you're right. No one has ever shown any proof that all of these people who are showing up at these town halls are just paid agitators. I don't buy it. No. I think people are showing up because they're worried and concerned about what is going to happen with this budget.
And not all of these individuals who go there are dyed-in-the-wool liberals, leftists, Democrats. It's people of all stripes, of all backgrounds coming, not all backgrounds, I should say, but people who are just regular folk coming to these meetings who are worried about their Social Security, their Medicaid, their Medicare, their house, their kids, their child care, all these things that the politicians say they care about, yet seem to always vote against. But somehow their friends are able to buy their 8th boat.
Well, got to look out for the people who are bankrolling you.
And I need an 8th boat.
Mark Pocan, over the weekend at this town hall in Eau Claire, chided Republicans for cutting Medicaid benefits for nearly 14 million Americans, raising premiums for the Affordable Care Act, and cutting food assistance to 11 million mostly low-income kids through SNAP. The Republican budget also extends tax cuts passed in 2017 for, guess who? America's top earners.
Mm-hmm.
Resulting in a nearly $5 trillion national deficit over 10 years. again, now we have said that Ron Johnson has come out very vocally against this.
Because he cares, Jane, about the working folks getting access to medicine, healthcare, childcare.
Yeah, no.
I thought that's the text message he sent me.
No, that's not what he's worried about. He's worried about mortgaging our children's future, Greg, through debt. Because this, and again, he seems to be one of the few Republicans who has admitted that this is going to, this bill in that passed the House will add massively to our deficit. I guess we give him credit for that.
No, I will not. No, sorry. I'm sorry. I'm tired of giving people credit for doing the wrong, because he's lying by omission. Because you had someone like Dr. Lyerly on this morning on Pat's show saying that her and he could share the same concern about exploding the deficit based on this bill. The problem is that we want to look at proper cuts. We want to look at proper funding. We want to look at taking down spending on all things if that is the way of finding the money to make these cuts happen. But Ron Johnson wants to cut more social programs.
Right.
He wants to cut into entitlements. He wants to make people suffer. And those people voted for him. That's how he wants to be able to, quote, afford this, because he wants the massive tax cuts versus I'm worried about deficits exploding because of children, grandchildren, friends, putting this cost on them for the future. There's a different reason. And one is more based in caring about humans versus his is pure and unfettered greed.
He's worried about the future. Not about climate change, though.
No.
He's worried about the deficit affecting his children and his grandchildren's future, but not about climate change. I'm trying to find this quote because he has said, we shouldn't spend one penny on climate change. Here it is. I mean, I love the outdoors, he said. Quote, we shouldn't spend a dime on climate change. We'll adapt. We're very adaptable.
I thought they didn't believe in evolution either. So
good point.
Yeah. I mean, that's the thing. It's like, if you really worried about your and there's no, I don't know his kids or grandkids. They're fine. They're going to be fine. They're his great, great, great grandchildren will be fine. As long as, you know, someone doesn't get into buying up land that falls into the earth. Like, they are going to be just fine. When he talks about his kids and grandkids, he puts them in the same class as my friends worrying about their kids and grandkids who, they're blue-collar folks. They're working-class folks. They're middle-class folks.
Their business doesn't have their own plane.
Well, they're poor, so they don't make businesses happen. So, Jane, let's just...
they're not job creators.
They're not job creators. But, yeah, I'm tired of this disingenuous concern from Ron Johnson about us, because he doesn't care about us unless you are injured by the vaccine, of course.
Well, that's a whole nother discussion. But anyway, we can all relax, you guys.
Why?
Because we're all going to die.
Really?
We have this direct from an Iowa senator's mouth. I wasn't sure about it, but she confirmed it over the weekend. We are all going to die. We have all the details coming up. Don't go away. You're listening to Matt Nair on Air on the Civic Media Radio Network.
You're listening to Civic Media. Stay up to date on the latest news and information for your local community and Wisconsin by signing up for our free email newsletter. Visit civicmedia.us/email to get started.
Good morning and welcome to Matt Nair on Air. Jane Matt Nair, Greg Bach, and the Calvinator on the board coming to you from our studio at Radio Park in Racine. You can always join us, call or text. The number is the same, 855-752-4842. Leave a comment on the live stream on Facebook, YouTube, and what used to be Twitter. Coming up a little bit later on today, Todd Alba from 2 to 4 across the network, 2:35. Todd's going to speak with State Senator Kelda Royce. She is on the Joint Finance Committee. She'll have an update on the Wisconsin state budget. At 3 o'clock, Todd is joined by Wisconsin Watch reporter Tom Kircher. So join Todd today from 2 to 4 across the Civic Media Radio Network. Coming up after the 9:30 news, economics professor Rick Reed will be here. If you have a question for the professor, please send it in. You can email it at janesays@civicmedia.us. You can text it in at 855-752-4842, or you can leave a voice note.
Yes.
If you have the Civic Media app, there's a place now you can record a voice note. So, Professor Reed coming up after the 9:30 news. This happened, over the weekend. Iowa Senator Joni Ernst was at a town hall recently.
Yeah.
And she was talking about Medicaid.
Yes.
And someone in the audience yelled out, if you make these cuts, people are going to die, essentially. Mm-hmm. And Calvin, I believe we have a clip from Senator Ernst. What was her response during this town hall meeting, please?
They are not eligible, so they will be coming off. So we all are going to die. So for heaven's sakes, folks, okay, no.
For heaven's sakes, folks, we're all going to die.
Well, from a philosophical standpoint, she is not wrong.
No, she's not wrong.
But, I mean, dude. My dude.
Well, and then she came back, because there was a lot of blowback from this.
Yeah.
Then Senator Ernst came back with a response that she filmed in a cemetery.
Oh, it was great. I mean, whomever works for her, chef's kiss.
It was so smart. Calvin, I believe we have a little sample from that response. Can we play that, please?
Hello, everyone. I would like to take this opportunity to sincerely apologize for a statement that I made yesterday. Hello, everyone. I would like to take this opportunity to sincerely apologize for a statement that I made yesterday at my town hall. I was in the process of answering a question that had been asked by an audience member when a woman who was extremely distraught screamed out from the back corner of the auditorium, "People are going to die." And I made an incorrect assumption that everyone in the auditorium understood that, yes, we are all going to perish from this earth.
Pretty much.
But
so I apologize.
Okay.
Yeah.
And I'm really, really glad that I did not have to bring up the subject of the Tooth Fairy as well.
Real sincere, for those real sincere response there from Senator Joni Ernst.
Then she ends it with, get with Jesus.
Right.
Yep.
Go with God.
Yeah.
I don't know if, I mean, again, this is playing really well in some circles. Oh, she, lib tears. We love it. We love the lib tears. Joni Ernst, way to come back to it. I don't know that this is going to work so well for her in the long run.
I don't think so either. There's already a person who's running against her in Iowa for this seat, a Democrat, and they're running ads already.
We're using this.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
I mean, it's just dumb. Dumb stuff.
Jim from Brookfield is on the line. Good morning, Jim. Thank you for waiting. What did you want to say?
Good morning, Jane. Good morning, Greg and Calvinator. I just want to say, circling back to our beloved Senator Ron Johnson's never-ending fight for tax cuts for the wealthy, he has occasionally, as a lot of right-wing politicians, when they're finally called on it, you know, why do we have to keep giving tax breaks to the wealthy at the expense of the poor? You know, the classic line is, well, no poor man ever built a factory.
Right.
Okay, well, I would like to ask Mr. Johnson, first of all, how many factories has he built? And second of all, how many billions do you need to build a factory? And why, when you build these, the few that do, why can't you afford a living wage with health insurance? So let's make a list of all the factories Mr. Ron Johnson and the U-Lines and everybody else has created that have paid, you know, living wages with health care. And how many billions they still have after any of those expenditures.
Wait, if we could actually get him to sit down and answer a question, Jim, that'd be a great idea.
Yeah.
I have all kinds of things I would love to ask Senator Johnson. But you make a really good point. And the one thing that I used to say, too, you know what? If you have a good enough job where you can afford a cleaning lady, you're a job creator, aren't you?
Yeah. Thank you, Jim.
Appreciate you calling.
As I said before, I'm not poor, but I'm also not rich, wealthy, but I'm a job creator.
If you hire a lawn service, aren't you a job creator?
But I love that he said this because once again, within the statement is a conversation, which is, yeah, Poor people probably aren't job creators because poor people don't have access to the funds that you do. They don't have access to opportunity like you do. Maybe if we made it easier and the education out there, maybe there is a person who qualifies as poor. Is like, I want to open up my own food truck. I want to open up my own
juice stand, whatever,
hat store,
right?
Whatever. We make those opportunities possible so they can grab those bootstraps, pull them up, and become a job creator and, you know, make a good living here in America. So when you say there poor people don't make jobs, okay, great. How do we change that?
We have news coming up next, and then when we return, economics professor Rick Reed will be here. Stay with us. You are listening to Matt Nair on Air. This is the Civic Media Radio Network. Don't go away. Good morning and welcome. Welcome to Matt Nair on Air. Jane Matt Nair, Greg Box, Sweet Cal B on the board. Coming to you from our studio at Radio Park in Racine, you can always join us, call or text. The number is the same, 855-752-4842. Leave a comment if you're watching on the live stream on Facebook, YouTube, and what used to be Twitter. We're talking Econ 101. Joining us, because we are not economics experts, that's why we talk to the experts. Rick Reed is here, an economics instructor with the Fox Valley Technical College. Good morning, Rick. Thanks so much for joining us.
Good morning. Thanks for having me.
Absolutely. We wanted to talk about the downgrade, the U.S. downgraded by Moody's. All three major credit rating firms are no longer giving the United States their best rating. For those of us who have never taken economics and are just kind of peripherally aware of economics, what does this mean and why should we care?
We should all care. So probably the easiest thing to relate to is when you go to apply for a credit card or a loan, say to buy a car, the lender is going to run your credit report, and they run it through one of three credit rating agencies, and they collect data on you and they determine how likely it is you are to pay your bills on time. And based on that score, helps determine what your credit, what your interest rate is likely to be and how likely lenders are to be able to lend money to you. In a very simplistic way, this is kind of a very parallel situation. Nations, when they go to lend money or go to borrow money, get rated. And the three dominant ones that we care about in the United States are Standard & Poor's, Fitch, and Moody's. Standard & Poor's downgraded us in, about 2011. Fitch was just a couple of years ago, about 2023, and Moody's was the last one, right, to come to the show. And basically what it means is that the United States credit, in other words, when the United States sells bonds to be able to borrow money from anybody that's willing to lend it to us, we're slightly less perfect in terms of our ability to manage our debt and pay our bills.
Well, and that's what it comes down to, essentially, if I am hearing you correctly, Professor, that they are looking at the United States and how likely we are to be good for our debts, right?
Right. And actually, Moody's, in its commentary, offered a few comments. One of them is that the big knock on the rating resulted from our inability to manage our debt overall and come to agreement. And this has been something that's plagued both Republican and Democratic administrations and Congresses. So this isn't something that suddenly happened.
Right.
However, it did just suddenly happen.
Because of this latest downgrade by Moody's.
Right.
Right.
Rick, I have a question for you, because I remember that push notification that came through my phone saying that Standard and Poor's had downgraded America's credit rating, and it sent shockwaves through the news. I mean, it was like, oh, okay, our economy is very bad, and we were like downgraded, I think, one level, and it wasn't the end of the world, but it was still a huge thing and it's hard to come back from. Did Standard and Poor's ever upgrade us? Did we get back to the perfect across the three, or have we been sitting at that credit rating with them since 2010, 2011?
I believe we're sitting with the same credit rating since 2010, 2011.
Yeah. So the question I would have, because I'm an individual who has for the past, oh, good Lord, time's a construct, say 15 years, I've been working on getting my credit better and better and better because for me as a person, it helps.
Yes.
How does that work for a country, though? What's the process? What's the process for, like, if America said, hey, we want to really get back on track and spend right and get that credit rate? Because if it hasn't changed since then, does it really matter then? Because as an individual basis, I feel like credit ratings are kind of a scam. I think it's a game. But how does the country on the whole
improve our credit score?
Yeah.
Right. Well, the big knock has been on our ability to manage our debt and our budgets. Moody's made commentary that it felt fairly confident that we were able to manage the value of the currency, which is really important, right? And that falls on the shoulders primarily of the Federal Reserve. They've done a great job of making sure that the value of the dollar has been relatively stable. But the thing that really has hurt us is the fact that we continue to run deficits and we don't seem to be able to get that under control. And as importantly, we don't seem to be able to set a clear path over time. So if you think about the current issues that are hitting us, the tariffs, all the issues around the tariffs have created a lot of uncertainty in the marketplace. And the issues around the administration is calling the Big Beautiful Bill that has now been approved by the House of Representatives. You know, that wasn't the thing that comes to my mind is that remember the film from this is a long time ago, Planes, Trains, and Automobiles.
Sure.
And John Candy and Steve Martin are driving down the highway. They're trying to make time, and a driver is riding parallel to him and honking their horn saying, "You're going the wrong way." And Candy and Steve Martin go, "Ha ha ha, how do they know where we're headed?" right? Sure, buddy. Ha 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 ha. You know, this is kind of the same thing in my, that was the first thing that came to my mind was that Moody's is basically saying, folks, you got to get your act together. Congress and the administration are saying, okay, yeah, this is what we're going to do for our budget. We're going to have these tax cuts that we're going to reinforce. We're going to cut some spending in specific areas like Medicaid and SNAP. But at the end of the day, the Congressional Budget Office has basically said that bill is going to create another $3.8 trillion in debt over the next 10 years. That's the kind of thing that Moody's is pointing to and saying, you know what, you've got enough debt. You've checked that box. It's time to reel it in a little
bit.
And you need to start making some progress in that direction.
Oh my gosh, that is, I don't want to say but that's a really, for me, my brain, that's a really good comparison. And now as a way of thinking and talking about it, that's a really scary way of putting it, that they're basically saying, hey, here's how you do it. And we're like, cool, we're going to do it a different way. See you in a couple of years.
Well, and I guess, again, I go back to the IRS under President Biden, because they had hired so many more IRS agents who were going after the bigger tax cheats, which brought in brought in over $1 billion when they were doing that. And now they've X'd that out. So we don't have that revenue coming in either. So it's kind of a rolling ball that doesn't seem to be stopping anywhere, does it?
Exactly. No, it doesn't. And it seems like it may be headed in the wrong, direction.
Right.
you know, one of the great challenges though, is that we talked a little while ago about the U.S. bonds.
Yes.
And the fact that the yield just went up on the U.S. bonds because they became less attractive. And that preceded Moody's downgrade. And there have been a number of factors, not the least of which is the fact that part of it had to do with China selling off a lot of their holdings of the U.S. Treasury bonds after they were threatened with a very steep tariff level.
Right.
And, you know, you can interpret it however you want. The easy interpretation is that China was saying, okay, if you're going to charge us with tariffs, take this. And they sold off a bunch of U.S. Treasury bonds. And what that really did was it effectively depressed the price of the bond, which raised the yield rate. Bottom line is it makes it more expensive for the U.S. government to borrow money moving forward, right?
On that topic, Rick, so, you know, in China sold bonds. Who do they sell them to? Do they sell them back to the United States? Do they sell them to other countries? Do they sell them? Can they sell them to individuals? Or because if they're selling them off, I'm just wondering who gets them in the long run then.
Yeah. An easy way to think about bonds is kind of like cars.
Yeah.
You've got the brand new car coming off the assembly line, and then you've got the used car market, right? And so when the U.S. issues a bond, it's minting a brand new car, a brand new bond, and they sell it to the market, and it matures in, you know, 1, 2, 10, 30 years.
Right.
In that period of time, that bond can be sold on the open market to anybody that is willing to buy it. So it's kind of like the used car market in that analogy. But much like the used car market, it doesn't exist in isolation. So if the used car market is starting to show signs of price instability, that impacts the new bond market as well. So when already issued bonds are generating a lower price, translating to a higher yield to the buyer, that means that the U.S. government, when it issues new bonds, has to compete against that, and they have to kind of respond in kind.
If you're just joining us, economics instructor Rick Reed is our guest. He's with Fox Valley Technical College, just talking about Econ 101, trying to break things down for those of us who are not economists. And we had talked about bonds the last time that you were on because, from what I understand, Rick, bonds were like the most solid of bets. Bonds were always a pretty solid bet, right? You are buying from the U.S. government. You are helping to fund the U.S. government by buying bonds. Is that accurate?
Correct. You're supplying the lendable funds to the government.
I'm loaning them money.
Right.
I'm loaning them money. But then when the interest went up, that was bad for the government, but good for me as the holder of the bond?
Exactly. Exactly. Because the reality of part of what you're buying with a U.S. government bond is a very secure instrument. So far, knock on wood, the government's never failed to pay its debt
right
to any of the bondholders, right? So from that perspective, you're basically getting a kind of a sure thing. When bond prices go down and the yield rate goes up, it's good for you as an investor. It's horrible for the government because now they're paying a higher interest on anything they need to borrow money for.
I guess the question, and I've asked this question to a lot of situations where we are investing in the government, whether it's our Social Security, our unemployment insurance. What happens if the government can't pay? Is it just so it's too bad, so sad? Or is it, I mean, do I have action to get my money because I bought in good faith from you and now you're saying you can't pay me? Is it you risk it with the bond, even though it's so surefire, or is it something where I can come back? And honestly, we have to go to break. So if you want to answer this on the other side of the break, because it's going to take a little bit longer, but.
Rick Reed is here, an economics instructor from Fox Valley Technical College. We are going to continue with Econ 101 on the other side. Stay close. You are listening to Matt Nair on Air on the Civic Media Radio Network. We'll be right back.
You're listening to Civic Media. Find the latest news, information, and archives of all your favorite shows on the Civic Media website, civicmedia.us.
Good morning. Welcome back to Matt Nair on Air. Jane Matt Nair, Greg Bach, and Dr. Slide on the board. Coming to you from our studio at Radio Park in Racine. Join us at 855-752-4842. You can leave a comment if you're watching on the live stream on Facebook, YouTube, and what used to be Twitter. And just a reminder, make sure you have the Civic Media app. Mm-hmm. Our statewide Scani Summer Text to Win contest gets underway today. You have a bunch of chances to win. Listen in the 7, 11, 2 and 4 o'clock hours for that hour's keyword. Yep. You want to text in that word via the Civic Media app and be in the running for some fantastic prizes that could but probably won't change the course of your entire life. Download the Civic Media app and be ready. In the 11 o'clock hour, Tom Hartman will have the word for you to text in. Good luck.
We were talking to Rick Reed, who is an economic instructor at Fox Valley Technical College. And before we went to the break, I posed a question that I will sum up very quickly. If I, the investor, invest in U.S. bonds and the government can't pay yields on those, what is our recourse as individuals or anybody?
Yeah, basically sell the bond is what you would do, because the likelihood of them saying we're not going to pay, period. I don't think it'll be like a light switch where one day we can pay, the government can pay, and the next day it can't, with no news about that in advance. More likely what would happen is that if the government was unable to pay, and really what we're talking about is not that it can't pay, but that it can't pay on time.
Right.
The reality of it is that would push the value of the bonds down pretty considerably, push the yields up pretty considerably. And I think what you'd see is a bunch of investors that are holding bonds trying to sell them very quickly. The likelihood of us going from where we are today to that scenario, it would take years, maybe decades. I don't think you're going to see it happen overnight. What's more likely, though, is that we continue down the path of having an eroding credit rating as a nation. And if that continues to happen, and if the government, well, one of the things that happened, I think it was back in 2012, 2013, where the government basically was shut down. There was a group of congressmen that basically said, if we can't balance the budget, we're just not going to pass the bill.
Right.
We're not going to pass a bill that doesn't balance the budget. Noble cause, a really bad way to do it. And the reason it's a bad way to do it is that it basically raised the question of the stability of the government and the ability to pay its bills on time. And that's going to have an impact on attractiveness of bonds to buyers.
Cassandra on the live stream is essentially asking the same thing. If this House bill does not pass in the Senate, what happens then? Do we default on our debt, or is it just more likely that they're going to have to do another continuing resolution?
Right, they're going to have to continue to. We're going to patch this thing up as long as we can. Now, historically, what we've had if you look over the last 10 years, we've had really low interest rates, right? Really low interest rates. And so that's enabled the government to be able to borrow money and not worry quite as much about balancing the budget urgently, right? Because the interest rate, you know, if you're paying, you know, 2%, it's a lot better than if you're paying 3%, 4%, 5%.
Sure.
That time is going to start to run out, and we're going to start to see the interest payments start to rise pretty quickly if we're not careful.
Well, and weren't our interest rates held not unnecessarily, but they were held low for a long time purposefully.
Right. Yeah, right. The Federal Reserve, in response to the Great Recession of 2008-2009, one of the things that it did was loaded its balance sheet. Basically, they made as much money, lendable money, available as possible.
Right.
Because one of the things that you don't want to have happen at the end of a recession, during a recession, or at the end of the recession, is having qualified borrowers not being able to access funds quickly and relatively inexpensively. You want them to be able to borrow the money to be able to invest to stimulate the economy.
Right.
The Federal Reserve kind of went overboard on that a little bit.
Well, because they kept them
for quite a while.
They kept them really low for a long time.
You bet.
Yeah.
This is why we have experts on, folks, because Jay and I, we are not experts. We're not lawyers, doctors, or economists. We are all those things adjacent.
Yes. That's why Rick Reed is here, an economic instructor from Fox Valley Technical College. We've got time for maybe one more question, Rick.
Yeah, Lori from Hayward asked the question, do you think that we should raise, do you think the Social Security cost of living adjustment should be raised this year?
Well, historically, it's raised based on the cost of living. They raise it based on the CPI from the prior year, and it's voted on by Congress to be able to enable it. So if you're receiving Social Security, you want it raised as much as possible. If sure. you're not receiving Social Security, you're kind of, you know, you don't really care much until you start, you know, getting yeah. close to it. So should it or shouldn't it be? You know, the standard practice has been that it's raised in accordance with the CPI.
There was an increase last year, I believe. Okay. I believe there was an increase in the cost of living last year. He is an economics instructor with the Fox Valley Technical College. We do Econ 101 with Rick Reed to try and break things down. Thank you so much. We really, really appreciate your time.
You bet. Thanks for having me on.
Stay with us. News is coming up next. And then when we return, we go beyond the cheese with the McLaughlin and Hayes Hat Company. Stay close. You are listening to Matt Nair on Air on the Civic Media Radio Network.
The national news cycle never stops, but it can be hard to find news about your local community. Civic Media is dedicated to providing quality local and state news coverage across Wisconsin. With the Civic Media app, you can get notifications about local stories that matter to you and your community. Find the free Civic Media app in your phone's app store and choose notifications from the menu to tell us what kind of news you want to hear about.